I'm Jerome Austin-Towsey, director of the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, and this is the Living Permaculture Show with Katie and Kay. Today, we're exploring the topic of perennial economy and alternative to capitalism. And we have two guests. Patrick Hunter is in the studio, and Michael Thompson will be calling in. Patrick, you recently took and been studying macroeconomics at the CMC. And after that class, you wrote an article for the Soper Sun. And that article lays out what we have as far as the economics we have now, that's sort of the normal economics we have now that we're experiencing. And also, you want to just summarize that article a little bit, and we'll kind of give us a chance to figure out where we'll go from there.
Sure. I'd like to give a shout out to our professor, Steve Boyd, who has become the finance director at Glenwood Springs, and the class in macroeconomics, and we're looking at really the big picture. One of the things you find as soon as you start looking at the text is that everything is directed towards growth. Any speech you hear from any politician, you're always going to hear this need for growth. And so that's become a central theme throughout our society. People call it capitalism. There's words like neoliberalism. But in general, what happens is you're constantly on a sort of a treadmill, and you're constantly trying to increase everything in terms of your business, in terms of your income. And we're all involved in that. This valley is very much, as you look around, you can see all the activity that we're having right now. The problem is that we just don't have the resources to continue this kind of burning desire to keep increasing our wherewithal and so on. So we're looking at a point in time when we're really going to have to be shifting gears. One of the people who was really good at explaining this was a professor at CU. Dr. Al Bartlett recently passed away, and he's got a legendary YouTube video that you can catch. And he concludes that exponential growth is absolutely absurd. It can't happen. we're in a limited environment, a limited planet, and so on. And he would say that sustainable growth was an oxymoron. So, our Earth only works because we're living within a very fine line of acceptable temperature, of acceptable climate. And people actually call it a Goldilocks situation. Not too warm, not too cold. It's got to be just right. And consequently, we're starting to get out of that phase, and we're starting to see the problems that are occurring in terms of wildfires and floods and new diseases, and just you can make a huge list. So that kind of leads us to the idea that we need to think about how to make some changes going forward, their future. And many people have proposed that we try and think of a new kind of economics, get away from the traditional sort of capitalism that we've all been sort of propagandized into, and think about how we can do something that's going to be more equitable for everyone. We've got this huge disparity between the super wealthy and the average working people in this country now, more than anything we've seen in a century. So there's indications that we're going to have to make a change.
Well, we could maybe the very last thing is that you asked, that nobody seems to know, where do we go from here? And that kind of caught my eye and my interest, is because we've been kind of asked to do another book, and we've come up with the title Perennial Economy. And what's that going to look like? So I thought I would go out and find some people who have already been talking about it. And fortunately, we have some pretty good, really good books that people can look at, and then I've been reading. The first one is written about 20 years ago by David Corton. It said, "When Corporations Rule the World," and he lays it out pretty much, and it's still going on today. And then a couple of years later, he wrote another book called The Post-Corporate World. And that kind of gives a lot of different scenarios on how we may approach it a little differently. And another book I found real valuable, sort of in between, is Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine. And that kind of that's kind of the playbook for some of the worst capitalism examples out there. I mean, it's the Friedman economics out of Chicago School. But I think that we have some guidelines to go and explore opportunities. And we all know of some things that are happening, some things that are really working, small projects. And we're going to have Michael come on and talk a little bit about slow money and local food economy and local food self-reliance. And what we've been working at Crimpy on is developing livelihoods. So the new economics and court says it has to model the natural systems. It has to have resilience, it has to have diversity, and it has to have limits. Most of the economy that we have now has no limits and no respect for the environment. So all of those ethics will have to be written into thought about if we're going to do something different and make it sustainable. And so what we're doing at Crimpy is creating about three livelihoods. And one of them is a nursery. Vanessa is already taking over that. And so we have a farm. So basically every farm would be its own ecosystem. And it would be resilient. It would be able to spin off different businesses. And what we're looking at doing is the nursery business, the education business, and one other business, which could be a tincture business. And all three of those would work under a nonprofit. And eventually they would all work cooperatively and run the farm, run the property, and give back to the mothership. I'm setting that up because I'll be retiring and moving out of the system pretty soon. That's just one possible opportunity. There are other examples out. Sustainable settings is a good example of a farm becoming an ecosystem and having a lot of outreach, economic different economic nuggets coming off of it and becoming sustainable. So we need to look at that, and I think we might just bring Michael on at this time, and have him talk a little bit about the slow money movement. Can you talk about the current chapter here, the chapter, and what you've done just recently? And I know that there are two journals, recent journals out on slow money that really talk about a lot of really good success stories that they've had across the country, giving small loans to farmers.
Sure, Gerald, can you hear me?
Yes, we're fine.
Oh, great. So, yeah, we recently had our spring meeting, and we had a large number of applications. But going back to the beginning, Slow Money is a book written by Woody Tash, came out about 7 years ago or so, and since then, it's a lot of people around the country have formed investment clubs. And here in the Roaring Fork Valley, Susan Brady in Carbondale started with Woody's help and some others, myself, a chapter, the first nonprofit chapter. So members join by giving donations anywhere from $100 up, $100 for farmers, and $250 for families on up per year, and as much as they want to give, and they get a tax deduction for the investment, for the donation, if you will. then that money is loaned out to food entrepreneurs and farmers that are in our food shed, that are growing for our food shed, producing for our food shed, and as 0% interest loans. And it's a wonderful program and a boost to small farmers who don't get federal subsidies. And we want them to feed us. So that's the slow money story. And there's a new club forming in Boulder now called SOIL, which is Slow Opportunities for Investing Locally. That's going to be a nonprofit club. And so it's a movement.
And so there were about four farmers that got loans here locally. Do you want to just mention
a
couple?
Yeah, we had three in this round. Casey Pascura, wonderful farmer up above sustainable settings and a great seed saver and seed breeder, Wild Mountain Seed. And then a delivery, a couple doing a delivery service over in Paonia, and they're delivering to our valley here. And then the Dandelion Market, the Carbondale Food Co-op, all are getting 0% interest loans to further their business interests. We had another round last year, and several local farmers, young farmers, Two Roots Farm, also Wild Mountain Seeds, and Glacier Ranch Co-op received loans and have all paid them back in advance of their, of their agreement.
Well, Woody is following up with some slow money journals.
Yes. Slow money journals. Slowmoney.org is where you can see all of that.
Right. And he published these. I think he's got two of them out now. And it's just full of success stories what's happened across the country. And a lot of stuff is happening right in the Midwest, where a lot of dairy farmers, goat operations, and other food hubs have gotten money to do what they need to do. One of the big success stories in Colorado is down in southeast of Colorado near Pueblo is the food hub there.
Right.
Do you know much about that one?
I don't know much about that one, but there will be coming very soon a food hub here, and that's just I'm just beginning to learn about that, so a little premature to give details. But it's a really great way for farmers when they have excess from after the farmer's market, instead of having to go back and can it themselves that night, they can just drop it off at the food hub for a discounted price, and then that can go out to lift up. That can be processed into food for all kinds of institutions and families and CSAs and et cetera. So it's a great idea, and that's something that addresses somebody's local food shed. And the food shed is where we should be putting our effort and our attention in terms of investment and in terms of consumerism, in terms of buying and supporting local farmers and local food entrepreneurs.
And that's really a really important part of this new perennial economy, is to be food self-reliant.
Sure.
A lot of us are energy self-reliant. People who have, PVs on the roof, they're doing, as much as they can in that area. The next best thing is to go for food self-reliance. And I think maybe I'd like to explore the possibility of, maybe Carbondale moving a little farther in that direction. And Petra and I talked about that, is that there's a farm just down below the studio here, a few blocks, called the Delaney property. And we've talked about that as becoming a city farm. Those are commons. That's really the common. We all own All the taxpayers in Carbondale own that property, and it could be a community farm. So and we could, you know, money could be raised through grants and other fundraisers to do all the infrastructure that needs to be done. You could start off with 20 acres of agriculture, perennial agriculture and annual agriculture. You could still leave room for the dog run. Carbondale does other things. They have a radio, a rodeo grounds.
Ice rink.
They have the ice rink. So they do a lot of really great things. They have lots of parks. And, you know, I think the next step would be to have a community farm. For me, it's, when I've been in agriculture here for about 40 years now, and I'm thinking, well, when are we going to get this thing up to the next level where we actually can, you know, move beyond that? I just want to take a little break here. We're on KD&K, and this is the Living Permaculture Show. Patrick, do you have anything you want to chime in here on now? And then, Michael, I want you to talk a little bit about your gifting economy. It's another small part of the puzzle that does help us move along.
With some of the thoughts you guys have been throwing out there, Montrose, Colorado, I understand, has a facility that's open to the public where people can come in and do their canning. And one of the things I've talked about with neighbors and so on, you know, we've got a lot of these old potato barns left over from the potato heydays that are great for storing produce like apples and potatoes and so on over the winter. And it's really hard to do that in your own home because of you just don't have that kind of cool environment. And so I'm sort of seeing a more public effort. I mean, as we go along here, we commonly think about our local town as taking care of streets and sidewalks and streetlights and things like that. But why can't that part of what that entity does also involve creating places for, well, we have community gardens, but even going beyond that, you know, we could use a place, for example, where local people could butcher their animals. I've now got neighbors with chickens, which I'm listening to quite a bit now, and they come over and join us in the yard every now and then. They're a lot of fun, and they provide a benefit. We get a dozen eggs every few days. So there's a certain momentum, I think, that's starting to grow in that direction, and forgive the pun. And Jerome, of course, has been a huge impetus behind that, and Michael, who's done so much. So I'm looking forward to seeing this really grow.
Yeah. I've got the thing about community gardens, I think, is that we're all sort of stuck in a particular, very limited model of community gardening. This is my box. That is your box. Your weeds are blowing seeds on my box. And I think we should. That, there's sort of a lot of boxiness in our whole social paradigm, as we know. But I think if we start to learn how to gather together into teams to address much larger areas, we can begin to see some of what Jerome has discovered in terms of perennial food forests and other kinds of models that would be really, really fun, a lot more fun, and a lot less work in the long run to have a different kind of community garden. And I think the Delaney property, you know, might be a great place to build up that soil and really grow something people can be proud of and eat from. So that's all great. Jerome, you asked about the gift economy. It kind of grew out of our homebrewers club. We have been over the years, the Roaring Fork Hams of Glenwood Springs. We've been choosing a nonprofit every year that throws themselves a party, and then we supply free beer. And we brew, you know, 12 batches or 8 batches, depending on the size. 5 gallons each of all these different flavors, and we give it away just to, you know, get a little love from the community, and then they get to, you know, raise money. People donate to get into the party. They have food and beer, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And since I homebrew, I can't sell it for money, but I can give it away all day long.
But you have other things you trade as well.
We call it gifting because a bunch of hunters will bring me some beautiful frozen cuts of meat, wild meat, and give it to me, and I'll say, oh, thank you. Here's some beer. Have some beer. And so, you know, I've been having relationships like that with, you know, people over baking bread that I make from, you know, bulk flour I get sometimes. With you, Jerome, through the UNFI account, or sometimes to the food co-op. And, you know, I bake bread often, and people like it. So I give gifts away, and I get gifts in return. And sometimes, oftentimes, the gifts that I get are actually replacing things I would otherwise buy with money from the market. But, yeah. You know, if I grow beautiful heads of lettuce in my garden, I give them to my neighbors, and they give me something they're growing in their garden. That's just the gift economy.
Great. We're just about ready to wrap up here. I do want to mention that there are a lot of underutilized farms and orchards, and one of the things we're doing at Crimpy is part of our agroforestry and carbon farming effort there is to take over an abandoned or an orchard in Peonia that hasn't been harvested for a while, and we're going to be adopting about 75 pear trees, and 35 are fruiting very productively, and we're going to be marking those here in the Roaring Fork Valley. And we're also giving people an opportunity to come and help prune and learn about fruit growing in the Peonia area and what opportunities there would be to get some free food in exchange for helping us out. We're also going to be drying some of it at sustainable settings, selling it to restaurants, selling it to the farmers market. And so that's another opportunity to have, you know, a lot of pears, and probably some apples too, because a lot of those go unused. So that's one of the things that we want to do is find things, and you find on the streets of Basalt, there's always lots of apricots just falling on the ground. And I've been harvesting, gleaning those for 20, 35 years now. And that's just another opportunity. Patrick, do you want to chime in for a
minute? Yeah, one real quick comment here is, if you think about the Uber taxi model, the great thing about it is the interconnection. And so when I was thinking about how to get the produce that individuals are producing and individuals are wanting, that a system whereby people can call and make reservations on their smartphone and have a delivery service, not unlike UPS or FedEx, drop that off at your doorstep and prepaid, so on and so forth. So a lot of the difficulty in making this thing grow is getting the connections.
Well, that's a great idea. I think I want to just wrap up here. This is Katie and Kay, and I'm Jerome Osentowski. If anybody's interested in any of our workshops at Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture, they should give us a call at 927-4158, or you could go on our website, crmpi.org. And again, some of the books that I recommend if you want to go further into this, and Patrick and I will be exploring this farther along down the road. When Corporations Rule the World by David Corton, and his second book, The Post-Corporate World by David Corton, and then Naomi Klein, The Shock Doctrine. And I know you've probably heard Naomi on Democracy Now!, but you don't really get the full impact of what's going on out there until you read the details in her book. So thanks again. We'll look forward to seeing you next month, and hopefully Stephanie will be back with us, and we'll go from there. Hey, you got a new day.